a Motorsport Podcast Network production. Hey everyone, Aaron Noonan here. Welcome to the V8 Sleuth Podcast powered by Repco. It's part two of my chat with Terry Wyhoon. Now on this part, we talk a lot about supercars. In fact, we talk about the time, I've never seen this before or since, that his V8 supercar got seized by police during a race weekend. It's a true story. And in another twist to the tale, how his team came back to win next time out. We talked with Terry about how he sees the future of the Dunlop Super 2 series, and he's got some pretty strong views on what he feels shouldn't happen with the series moving forward. And we also deep dive into why he nearly quit the series early last year. He also tackles the National Motor Racing Museum Top 10 Shootout, and we chat some memorabilia too, with thanks to our friends at the Motorsport Trader. So here we go, buckle up, time to start part two of Terry Wyhoon on the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Repco. Bathurst 98, I think Albert Park was the next year, the Motegi trip, and then pretty much it's lights out.
Lights out.
Did you see it coming?
No. And I don't know today what happened. You know, I never really, to be honest, got to talk to Bob about it. I had a really good relationship with Bob, but there was all these stories going around as to why, you know, why he shut it down, but to this day, I don't really know the answer.
Given what we've talked about, the prize money, building the joint, keeping it going, television pay, he must have spent so much money.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been hard to keep spending it.
Yeah.
And it had to come from somewhere. Mm. So whether it was coming from Team Arts or other, I don't know. But I think his legacy is he was a bloke who put, you know, a lot of people would be, he rubbed up the wrong way, or people got along famously, like everyone's got their winners and losers of life. But he had a dream, he found a way to do it, and he did something that no one else has ever done. And I reckon that chapter of the sport is really special for Australian motorsport
for
history, because it's just amazing when you look at it, not just the racing and the cars and who was who on the zoo, and but just the fact that it came from nothing.
Yep.
It wasn't like he bought an existing racing business and then just put another track up. And
no,
it was from the ground.
Did the whole lot.
Unbelievable.
And the crowds, as you know, what they were like.
Huge.
Huge crowds.
Like the minute they put the lights up,
yes,
that gave it another kick. Mm-hmm. I think 94 that was. Mm. That just took it to a whole other level.
I remember he told me he spent $2.5 million with a company called Musco.
Musco Lighting.
Yeah. And he said, you'll be able to see where you're going because we're going to race at night. And wasn't it spectacular? Oh. You know, sparks flying off things and brakes glowing. Oh. And, no, it was good. I'm glad I was a part of it. You know, it was. I wish it was still going.
Yeah, I watched a few YouTube videos over the holidays, and it's. I can't help but and I'd go to Bendigo a bit here and there. So from Melbourne, Bendigo, what do you drive past?
The dome.
So brings back a lot of memories. So hopefully we can keep those memories alive over the years to come for people who didn't get to go see the racing or know who was who in the zoo. What became of your championship winning Oscar?
I sold it to Jason Wiley.
From Tassie.
Tassie.
Yep.
He ran it the next year, right down to the last event. It was between him and
Matty White. Darren McDonald, maybe one of those two. Yeah. That's the problem with the Oscar NASCAR. Every year feels like the other.
Yeah.
Who was doing what when?
He could have won. Yeah, it was two or three of them there for the last event. He could have won, but he did something silly, clipped the wall and didn't quite win the championship the following year. Yeah. I believe he's still got that car sitting in a paddock.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
No.
Now, someone rang me about it. I'm talking only 6 months ago. Dave, signwriter from Melbourne, and he said that car is still there if you wanted to buy it as a,
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. I'd be more probably interested. Oh,
which would you rather, the Oscar or the NASCAR?
I was just going to say I'd probably rather that Oscar.
Yeah.
But, that NASCAR's got a – being the only Australian-built one is pretty special as well.
We might have a talk after this. We might have we'll ring BP, see if we can get a deal done.
Exactly.
Somewhere along the line. So the Thunderdome is over. NASCAR in the Bob Jane era is over. What next? We know that you go into the V8 Lite series, which it's something I wanted to talk to you about because at the time, of course, V8 Supercar was booming, late 90s, Evesco, Channel 10, Tony Cochran. Field sizes are up to the point where they need another series to put the privateers. So that's what the Konica V8 Lite series started as, which is Super 2 these days.
Yep.
So that's where you landed. Matty White landed there. Some of the Thunderdomers ended up going there because it was the place to go.
Mm.
But around the same time, and I remember that you did do the race at Bathurst, there was the Junior Tour of Bathurst Tour thing that Bruce Williams was getting cracking. That
that's
was
right.
kind of the taking all these Oscars and creating like a junior V8 series that wasn't really trying to compete with supercars, but Evesco felt it was because obviously it was going to compete with what became the development series.
Yes.
You had a run, I think, in one of those cars up at Bathurst the year that they ran there in 99. Yep. Was that – because that was right in that gap where the Thunderdome stuff was failing and the development series was starting.
Yep.
Do you reckon there was a place for that somewhere there? Clearly there's a fair bit of politics in it, but the theory that Bruce had and the gear and the cars and revitalising Oscar, I feel like it's one of those things that really should have gone further, but it got scuppered by politics.
Politics killed it, and there was, I believe, a place for it because he had, I think, Advantage at the time helping him.
That's
Brock,
right.
Brock was behind it.
He was managed by Advantage.
Yeah, he
which became Octagon later
Octagon,
on.
That's right, yeah. There were some fairly heavy players there that were going to help Bruce get this off the ground. I remember going to Calder Park with Bruce and Brock to develop the first car.
Mm.
Like, we ran it for a couple of days down there and Brock was there driving it and I'd drive it and Bruce would drive it and it was a ripper car, like real affordable. You could – that car wasn't a converted OS car, but you could convert an OS car to that exact same spec. It had some merit.
Mm.
And that race was quite good, that one you referred to at Bathurst. It was – yeah.
I remember it was wet.
Yeah,
I remember I got drowned.
Yeah. I drove with
– with Marshall. Yeah, that's right.
He crashed, I think. Not, I think, actually. Oh, no. Poor bugger in the rain.
Don't rub it in.
Stuck it in the wall at the top. Yeah, and quite a few of the Oscar guys did convert cars to running that.
Mm.
Was it called Junior Tourer?
Well, it had a few names. It was originally when Bruce conceived it Junior Tourers. Then it became Bathurst Tourers because the first race was at Bathurst in the wet 2 litre race in 99 that James Brock won in the converted X Peter Fitzgerald Oscar that became the Auto Art Blue Commodore. After that, I think there was a term, New Millennium Oscar, it was dubbed.
Okay.
Oscar 2000 or something.
Oh,
and
right
then Future Touring was kind of the moniker that sort of.
Future Tourer, that's what I was thinking.
And they ran with the Super Tourers for a few years. They ran as part of the Power Tour for a little while when Toka fell over. There was a Magna, remember?
That's right.
They built a VA-powered Magna.
Yep.
Falcons, Commodores.
Hmm.
It was the thing that Toka, when Super Touring died overseas, I think they were talking super production, slower cars, but they were going to take Future Tourers and I think they even announced it. They were going to call them Toka Tourers and that was going to be their series moving forward and then they pulled the pin on it. So it's a case of kind of what could have been. But by that stage, you found yourself an old HRT car.
I did.
And went
Peter Lawrence.
Konica Racing.
Mm.
So was that the kind of – that was the only place you could go race?
Yeah, and did I want to? No.
Really?
Not really. I was quite happy with my NASCAR and Oscar oval tracking and unfortunately, well, whatever happened there, you know, that got shut down. We wanted to continue racing something, probably should have put a little bit more thought into it. bought this car off Peter Lawrence, $50,000. He was working at CAMS at the time.
Mm.
Nice car. I wish I had it now.
Yes, good point. Well, and if our listeners are wondering why you would want it, because it was the first HRT VN that Wynn Percy raced in the 91 Touring Car Championship.
Okay.
Became a VP after that. became, and the livery it's in now restored, is has Craig Lowndes raced it at the Adelaide Grand Prix in 94 as 016.
In so what trim, VS?
VP.
Or? Oh, VP. So it got converted
so VM,
back.
VP, yeah. HRT used it as their test car at Bathurst in 94. So Lowndes, that's the first V8 that Lowndes drove at Bathurst at the media day that okay. year. So, you know, a few good names over the years had their backsides in it. Thomas Mazira raced it as well. Thomas Mazira crashed it once or twice as well. And then it ended up with Peter Lawrence and Michael Hart, who
yes.
tried to do Bathurst in 96, but the engine died four laps in a Wednesday practice and they had to go home.
Yeah.
And they ran Bathurst the next year, 97. And I think it sat around for a couple of years before
okay.
a certain ex-NASCAR racer wandered into to
yeah.
buy it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was, yeah, not my first choice, but that's where we decided to go and see what this Konica series was about. That was 2000, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's how that all kicked off.
So 50 grand. Oh, I'd hate to 50 know what it's worth
grand. Now. But, you know, yeah. And probably at the time it was all it was worth. It had a 5-speed Hollinger. It had an engine that, you know, wasn't real flash and, yeah. Made a little bit of a mistake there, but
that's
what
life.
It's what you know. And I thought, I've dug myself out before. We'll do it again.
So you, I guess, too, when the Thunderdome shuts down, your cars are not worth anything then because there's nowhere for anyone. And it's
that
not
was
a,
the issue.
It's not like, oh well, cool, a collector will buy it. Like perhaps you know, when you finish with one of your supercars downstairs here, put it back to how it was raced by the main game team, and there'll
that's
be a collector who'll buy it.
Exactly.
But, yeah, you know, you couldn't give them away.
They were worth nothing.
Mm.
So we had we were back to scratch.
Yeah.
All that work and, you know, it's funny, you know, you look at it and we build up through Oscar to NASCAR, had competitive cars in the end and with the prize money we could run them. Bang.
Mm.
No prize money, cars that you can't give away.
Mm.
So we gave them away
and
we started again. And hence I've gone, well, this is what we can afford. We can't go and buy a car off HR2. We can't go and buy a car off
whoever
was at the level time.
One
yeah,
type of team.
This is what we've got. Yeah,
yeah. So it's interesting you say that. So you didn't really want to do it.
Not really. It wasn't my no.
Mm.
And I guess I didn't enjoy it because when we started the first round, I realised that you do need a top level engine, a 6-speed Hollinger. You need to have spent the 150 grand or whatever it was at the time to be competitive in that level. And I had done a little bit of road course racing, obviously, by then with NASCAR and Oscar. And I didn't not enjoy the road. I just thought, I'm just starting with this shitbox again. I'm back to the start. Yeah. That was the bit that was a bit of a hard pill to swallow at the time. But yeah. And then off we went again. We got rid of the old VR or whatever it was, Denkar 02 it was, that chassis, and bought an EL, ex-Dick Johnson EL, which, you know, I think we ran fifth in maybe 2002 in the Konica series. That was quite a good car, a very good car actually, and then tried to upgrade into an AU, a 00 Motorsport AU that you wouldn't wish your grandmother to drive on a Sunday.
So it was a 00 car, but it wasn't a 00 car because
no, it was a what was it?
It was the color scan car with the red interior that Rodney Forbes had raced.
Yep.
It wasn't Lowndes or Crompton.
No.
Car. It was the Forbes car.
Yes. Rodney
and it was
Forbes.
Nothing like the other two.
No. I ended up with it. Yeah, that was another there was a period there where there was like 4 or 5 years at like, yeah, that old saying, if it was raining fannies, you'd get hit with an arsehole.
I remember too for that in that 2000 year, because different to how it is now, the Konica series teams, if you did well and you're in a certain point score range, you got an entry or ability to go to the Enduros.
That's right.
So you and Matthew White pooled your resources to Queensland and you ran in his car.
Yep.
You finished 11th.
Yeah.
Overall, stunning Well, he had an ex-Larry Perkins car.
That's right.
That was a cracking result.
Yeah, when Matt bought that car, it was a ripper. Yeah, ex-Bathurst winner.
Mm.
We brought it down here and prepped it. And myself, I drove with Matt, obviously, and a couple of my boys came along and, yeah, great weekend. We could have actually finished in the top 10. We had a deflating tyre, left rear tyre on going down for the last 20 laps. But, yeah, it would have been great, a top 10.
Yeah. Oh, it's one of those results at the time that I remember got a lot of
a
lot of attention. But for Bathurst, you went back to your car.
Yeah, I
did. And that's where Brock, PB, was in your pits because James was your car driver.
Great weekend spending with PB in the pits.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, doing a track walk with him. Yeah, that was pretty amazing, walking around there with Peter Brock. Quite funny, Joe, James. Peter's giving us all these tips, you know, and James is just not listening. And I got back, when we got back down the bottom, I said to Peter, you know, all those places where you're saying you hold it flat, you don't really hold it flat there, do you? And he goes, no, you don't. Let's just go over here and have a chat. And I said, so what? Why were you saying all this stuff on the pit, on the walk? And he goes, because James wasn't listening. So I just sort of try and get his attention. And I said, thank Christ for that.
You'd learnt your lesson from Jim Richards a few years before about holding it flat at Bathurst.
Yeah,
so.
Fun weekend though. Yeah.
So I do recall... So we've gone development series, bit of enduros. I think you ran with Rod Salmon 1 year at Bathurst.
2001. Yeah, just talking about that before there in your Ford book. Yep.
Yep. So, and then was there a year that you popped up in a Jim Beam car? Was that Mike Imrie's car somewhere along the line?
Yeah. So, you know, back then Mike had to run the car. He didn't have a driver. They're going to get fined for...
You got to run or else your franchise gets fined, yep.
A lot of money.
Yeah, 150 grand, I think it was.
Oh, I don't know what it was, around. But, yeah. Something ridiculous.
So you were like the fill-in bloke for the day.
I was, yeah. And we went to Clipsal, round one, and Mike said, you know, we're just going to run around and get things ticked off. And he said, but see how it goes and we'll, you know, work it from there. And I went out in P1, the throttle got jammed wide open. So not a good feeling. Came in, didn't have a spare accelerator cable, so we just pulled it out, cut all the frays off it and put some CRC down it, and they said, try that for P2. And I'm thinking, Jesus, this is not ideal.
Why am I doing this?
But before the cable got jammed again, it caught fire in P2, and then we went in the quali and we just bloody missed out. But we didn't have anything set up to run the car,
didn't
really,
have a
anyway.
Crew or refueling or anything.
No, so.
Just ticking the box.
Ticking the box.
So there's a period there where you sort of weren't in, you sort of stepped away from the sport for a little bit, but then you came back. And I reckon that's kind of around when what is now Image Racing.
Correct.
Was kind of built and created in that mid-2000s.
That's exactly right.
Period. So, I reckon you build a really good business case here where you, along the way, everyone has someone who helps them.
Yep.
Or a couple of different people.
Mm-hmm.
And you meet someone who goes, oh, I like car racing, oh, but I don't know how to do it. You know how to do it. Can you run this for me? Can you do this for me? Sure, yeah. Can you help me drive? Yeah, sure.
Yep.
That's sort of where that all started, wasn't it? You know, it's clients and customer work. And
that's right.
And that's what really got you rolling to what we're sitting at now.
Yeah, that's right. That's why we decided to build the new factory and, you know, get some new equipment in and so we could facilitate, you know, managing and preparing other people's cars. And that happened for a period of time, Aaron, and then I've kind of now gone to just really not so much doing outside work again. We're just concentrating on our race team again and, you know, trying to get results. And the only back probably like it was 20 years ago, but I'm just not behind the wheel.
Mm.
I'm trying to help these kids. Give them something that I know how hard it is to get and, you know, talk to them sometimes about the journey and how you can make it happen if you want and, yeah, just be on the cones and talk, you know, and get them through it.
Mm.
And that is, like I said, the shot in the arm now is getting these young kids to where they want to be.
Mm. You're not done in terms of, well, where were we talking about in that mid-2000s period?
Yeah.
And the foundations for what you're doing kind of now. But I do remember that you had a Stone Brothers car there for a while, a blue Falcon, which is Stone Brothers came to be blue, didn't it? That's the Marcus Ambrose kind of colour. I think you won a race at Wakefield Park in it from memory. One of the years you went. So you were away for a few years from the development series, and you ran the Touring Car Challenge, which was kind of a bit of everything, some old V8s, 2 litres, Group A. Then you came back into what was by then the Fujitsu
series. That's right. Exactly. I forgot about that period. Yeah. So we bought a Stone Brothers BA first and ran in that.
An AU was the first one, wasn't it?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes, we did. Yeah. You're going back there. Yeah, I bought a Stone Brothers AU.
Yeah.
Correct.
And was there two?
Yes. One from your mate, Dean Neville.
Yeah, yeah.
We bought two AU3 and AU4, SBR.
Your memory's good.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't know.
So I drove the car, the AU, which was famous for winning the 500 with Simon Wills and
Bernard.
Yeah. And the other car was the Ambrose car that my mate bought. Yes, that's right. Yeah, and we went back into what was it called? Fujitsu.
Fujitsu at that stage, I think it was. It was Konica, then it was Konica Minolta, then it was Fujitsu. But yeah, what we call Super 2.
Yep.
Super 2 these days. So I think you know where I'm building to here. So in 2007 was my first year with Supercars TV. I'm commentating the Fujitsu series. It's my first year doing this stuff. It's my dream job. This is fantastic. We go to Queensland Raceway in about May, June. It's probably – I've done 5 or 6 events maybe. I'm with my producer of the time, Paul Mullen. We're in your garage interviewing Owen Kelly because he's driving your car. He's getting ready to drive with Ford Performance Racing at the Enduro. So he's done a bit of a deal to have a steer to get his eye in and get himself ready. We've just finished interviewing Owen. And in those days, we didn't show those races live. They were post-produced. We showed an hour package the next weekend on Channel 7 on a Saturday. So camera down, and then the police turn up.
Yes.
It is still the most – I'd forgotten about it until we teed up that I was going to come and see you. How did you get your race car repossessed at a race meeting? It's the most out there story I think I've ever seen with my own eyes.
Isn't it? Yes. Well, it'd be interesting if you asked the previous owner why it was – picked up from the racetrack.
So we should point out you didn't do anything wrong.
Well, no. I bought this car, paid for it with a bank check outright for the money that was advertised for. Hence, when the final wash-up of all this got down to a court case.
And we don't have to go into the names of who was involved, but we can give the bits around the story.
The car was awarded back to me because I'd paid the full $110,000, I think, for the car at the time. And in a bank check. But somewhere along the line between me actually buying the car and the previous owner, he had half sold the car to someone else. And that person wasn't happy, which I could fully understand. So he contacted police or whoever he had that could issue a warrant.
And so how did it pan out that day when we were standing there at Queensland Raceway? I can remember it vividly in the big tent area.
Yeah.
So you get a couple of cops turning up.
With a warrant, which we finds out later that the warrant wasn't really a void legal document, but I don't know what a warrant is. I've never had a warrant before.
Probably a good thing to not have been in that situation before.
Exactly. Gets took traded away,
mid-race weekend. I think you'd done one practice session or something like
that. One or two practices, or something,
And they're saying, we're taking your car.
Yes,
And no ifs or buts.
No ifs or buts.
Put it on a truck.
Yep, see you later,
And they drove it out of the track that day.
Yeah, And then hence, however long later, I'm back up at the Yatla court.
Arguing to get your car back.
Arguing against the fella, nice fella that had so-called paid for part of the car before I bought it. We got awarded the car back. I felt sorry for this other guy, which I was talking to him later and he said, well, he understands the situation. Less than impressed, obviously. Yeah. Still waiting to hear the outcome of that one. I think it may raise its head again one day.
Oh, right. Jeez. Mm. It's only 15 years ago now.
I know.
Oh, heck.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. We'll keep an eye on that
one. I don't think he's the type of guy that is just going to let it go. I think he wants some compensation, and rightly so.
Right. Okay. One of those strange stories only in motor racing that could happen. I vividly remember the policeman telling my cameraman and I and the producer, Paul, to stop filming.
Oh, really?
So I rang Murray Lomax, who was the head of my boss at V8 TV, and he said, no, you're in a public place. Press record. Mm. So I don't know if there's a tape anywhere still in the archives at Supercars that there might be a – I'd say it would have been taped over years ago and not needed, or was clearly never used in the TV
in
broadcast.
The
interview with Owen in the preview story just didn't get a run because clearly he wasn't in any of the races, so it would look strange to interview a bloke who then doesn't appear. But then isn't it funny how motor racing works? So from that round where the cops turn up and take your car – you go to Oran Park that year with Owen, who's still getting his eye in. He'd been doing a bit of American stuff, I think, at the time.
That's right, yeah.
And by this stage, you and Dean, your mate, have got your hands on a BA Falcon, the next model, an old Brad Jones car. And he does something that no one in my mind has done in any form of supercars before.
Yeah.
What did he do?
Mm, started from pit lane and won that race in the pissing rain.
From last.
So those old BJR BAs, they had the alternator mounted on the diff, and unless the car was moving, there was no charge going into your battery. So it's piss and rain. You got the wipers on, you got your heated demister on, fuel pumps, everything running. You drive out of the pits, it starts, you drive out of the pits in the piss and rain, come around, sit on the grid while supercars scratch their ass, and what are they going to do for 10 minutes in those conditions? He goes to start it, to go off on the observation lap, she's dead. So, of course, the rules are the rules. You've got to come in, prove that it'll start.
Two pit lane, prove it'll start.
Yep. So officials bump start him out there on the grid. I'm on the radio. I said, Owen, come in. 45 degrees. Spike it. We'll jump it. Get it going. Put it in top gear and just hold the thing flat stick. Hence the belt on the alternator on the diff, charging the battery. And it was, remember Oran Park, was the pits were on a bit of a
downhill lane. Yeah.
She's vibrating on the four jacks out of our pit bay. And I just said, keep it going. And then just shut it off, drop it to the ground. And then I think it was Frank Lowne standing there. Start it. Yep, start it. Right, keep it going. So pushed him back down to the end of pit lane, wait for the race to start, and off he went after the last car.
Yeah. I think it was probably 16 laps or something. Like, it's not a mega long race in those days.
It's not, but...
And he passed, I think it was a 29, 30-ish car field, and he wins the race.
Yes.
It's insane.
Yes. Good race, wasn't it? On the phones going, go-kart lines, mate. I was standing out there in the piss and rain and just, around the outside, use tall gears. Yeah.
It was, is that Image Racing's best race win? I reckon it's got to be. You've had some good ones with some great young drivers in over the years, and you've done a bit of winning in your time, but you talked earlier about getting that satisfaction of seeing, and Owen wasn't mega young at the time. He was...
No.
He'd been around for a little while, but to good win a race era. In that
it's certainly one of the better ones. I mean, I think, we've had some of late that have kind of rewarded us, a little different, if you like, just in the last couple of years. But it was, at the time, that was bloody mega.
Given what had happened not long before that.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, and that was, mate Dean Neville, he was the type of guy that just went, oh, that's fucked, isn't it? What happened up there at QR? And he said, and we had a little bit of an issue with the AU at the time with the engine in it, and he said, I'll just go and buy myself a nice car and he can drive that, and he paid a lot of money for that car off Brad Jones.
Mm.
And it was a good car, but it was the sort of thing that Dean did.
Mm.
And he said, we'll put Owen in it for the Oran Park round.
Yeah, and look what happened.
Yeah. Jesus, the next day I was crook. We drank some grog that night. My wife, Dana, and I were talking about it just the other day. Yeah.
You got to celebrate the wins. Because motor racing, the highs are not very often. The lows are irregular. So
that's true.
You got to take them when you can you can get them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So image racing, development series there for a little bit. And then the Kumo V8 Touring Car Series, you won that series. You still, by the way, hold the record for the most race wins in that series, if you didn't know.
In Kumo.
Kumo, which is now Super 3.
Oh, yeah.
And because it's all young blokes coming through trying to step their way through, in general, you're going to hold that record for a long time.
Perfect.
Hey, I thought you'd like that.
Yeah. That was 2011, wasn't it?
I think it was. I won it. Yeah, in an X-Stones BA.
BA, that's right. That was the car I was – yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just missed a few years there before.
Yeah. There's a few bits going along the way. At what point then do you decide I'm going to step back from steering and we're going to run cars and help kids? Because that's one of the things you've always said is that your job and the other owners in Super 2 and Super 3 now, it's to bring the kids through to get them ready to go to the main championship. Mm. At what point did you decide I've enjoyed my racing, I'm still going to race a bit here and there, but I'm going to help, you know, be in this more of a mentor, team principal type role?
Sure. Well, I mean, after winning that in 2011, you know, like you could see the young kids coming through that needed the opportunities, and I wasn't getting any bloody younger. It's getting harder to beat them.
Mm.
So, you know, there's a point where you just start not to enjoy it so much, you know, because you could just, you know, feel the aches and the pains, and trying to see an apex wasn't quite as good as it used to be. And there's plenty of other categories. You know, I've gone on to do a little bit of the NC stuff with the Camaro and whatnot. So, I really feel for some of the really, you know, kids that are struggling financially and, you know, because it certainly is an expensive sport. So we decided that we'd try and give everyone as many as we could the opportunity to come through, help them with a little bit of sponsorship, you know, put this factory together, put this room together where they can come, bring sponsors along, look at the cars, you know, give them a whole package, if you like, that's really not costing us a hell of a lot. Give them that opportunity to utilize what we've got, and the good ones will grasp that, won't they, and run with it. And the ones that don't, well, you can't do much about. So no. Answer your question. Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed, you know, if we've had 20 drivers come through, which we probably have, I've enjoyed 10 of them. The others, I wish I never ever did it.
So a 50% success rate in terms of, right.
Yeah. It's difficult at times.
Yeah.
When dads are telling you you've got your tyre pressures 1 pound wrong, or it's the car, it can't be me boy.
My son's a world champion, just ask me. Mm-hmm. There's been a bit of that in racing over the years.
There has. And it makes it – I have no interest in listening to any of that. We work our guts out, provide a good product, and then you think, this is not for me. And a few times we've come very close to just getting rid of the whole lot of this.
We have had those chats a couple of times over the journey. What was the closest where you went, this is a too hard basket?
The closest? Last year? Yeah.
2021.
Mm.
After the Bathurst exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, young Jordan Boyce, who'd been with you for a few years over the journey in Super 2, young bloke from up Albury Way, had a win up at Bathurst in the first round. In the aftermath, sometime later, there was an issue with the engine, which is from an outside supplier. He was excluded. You know, you lose a win that you would have had, the points that go with it, all that stuff, with something that's out of your control because you don't build your engines. You get them supplied. Mm-hmm. You pay a everyone knows it's Wild Controls. That's how it unfolded. So was it that bad after that you thought, why are we doing this? Was it because of how that all happened and what happened? Or was it a case of you were kind of starting to think that and that made
you? No, it was all because of that.
That's a big thing.
It is. Like, you got this kid who's a mechanic busting his ass to get, you know, pay the bills, knocking on people's doors. He's always the first one to pay us. A ripper kid, ripper family. We've got to become very close with them, which we do with all our drivers. We lease engines from Walkinshaw because they are the best engines in the paddock. There's no doubt about that. They look after us. They're great people to deal with. But they're a shareholder in supercars. I pay them a lot of money for good engines, and I want the kids to have the best engines. Nothing to do with me whatsoever, you know, and yet we cop it. He loses the race. I tried my hardest. Fine me $50,000. Fine me. Do whatever you want. Do not take the race off this kid.
From the technical perspective, what was wrong for those who might not know the
So at Adelaide last year, there was a problem with when they changed to a new ring package and a different engine spec for main game. Walkinshaw were having problems with cylinder heads. And I didn't even know this at the time, but they had contacted supercars and said, hey, we're out of cylinder heads, they're cracking, blah, 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 the new valve, whatever the change was, you know, isn't suited, we're in trouble. And they said, basically, if you've got cylinder heads, you can run for the next event. We have, but they're on our Super 2 engines that I'd already signed an agreement to use. They said, use those heads off the Super 2 engines and put whatever you got laying around onto the Super 2, right? I still don't know any of this. So they ran this old spec cylinder head that supercars didn't have the drawings for, you know, because at the start of each year you have to submit the VSD, the not the VSD, the ESD, the engine specification documents.
Yep. From every engine builder.
From every engine builder and show supercars what you're going to use. Supercars didn't have the drawings or the specifications of these old cylinder heads, but they were told to use them. So they put them on my engines, and that particular engine at Bathurst went a couple of horsepower, 3 horsepower over the cap is what I was told. So instead of the cap at 650, we were 653. That ain't going to win you a race, but I understand the rules. Mm. But at the time, there was nothing else Walkinshaw could have done.
Mm. Yeah. Short of not being able to give you an engine.
Yeah. Mm. So they did what they were told by the technical department at Supercars.
So but I feel that the your feelings are more towards Supercars than towards
absolutely.
Walkinshaw's.
Yeah. Walkinshaw's the fella in charge of the engine department at Walkinshaw's, Ryan Medjew, he was told to use those cylinder heads. I have no doubt whatsoever. I've seen emails. But the technical people that made the decision on the other end, for some reason, decided, no, we can't recall that. So that's how it went down. And I tried my hardest. I said, do what you like then, but don't take the race off that kid.
Mm. But that didn't. That fell on deaf ears clearly, and they made the ruling that they made.
Yeah,
and that clearly made you go, "Why are we doing this?
Why are we doing this?" Hence, why I put the cars on the market, and you were one of the first buggers to ring me. So I'll sell those for you.
There's always people out there who want race cars, mate. Mm.
I'd hate to have a cut on my hand if you're a fox or something.
Well, out of all of that, I'm very glad that you are still supporting and still involved in Super 2. You've you know, we've just been, before we started recording, down the workshop. You've got your two cars stripped from as they finished last year. Can you give us any insight into this year, Super 2? What's happening? You got some steerers or what's happening?
Yeah.
We've only got a couple of people listening. I won't tell anyone.
Yeah, right, a couple of people. Yeah,
yeah, a few, yeah.
Yeah. So young Jalen Rowbotham's coming back with us this year. He's a great kid. We've been lucky the last 2 years. We've had some rippers. You know, and they're fitting into our little family group, if you like. And we're in discussions with young Josh Fife at the moment. We'd like to hopefully offer him something next week. Barry Ryan and I are meeting on Tuesday to finalise all that. But thanks to, you know, Erebus and, you know, what we're doing here with our cars, they are going quite well, and we have had a lot of calls.
I was going to ask you, because you've got a tie-up to Erebus. What is it? How did it come to be, and how does it all work?
How it came to be was I wanted to buy a car of the future, and I asked Barry if they were interested in selling a car. He said to me, yeah, I'll sell you that car, which was Dale Woods at the time, an old Walkinshaw thing. He said, but, you know, we're limited. We don't want to get involved in it. We've got our own program, our own agenda here to get Erebus up the ladder in the main paddock. He said, but I'll sell it to you, but that's the deal. And I've known Barry, you know, he's been around as long as you and I. Mm. And I said, yeah, fine, mate. And so we bought the car, and I suppose, you know, like to be fair, Barry rang me and said, I haven't heard from you. Is everything going all right? And I said, well, you fucking told me not to ring you, not to bother you. And he goes, oh, no, we want to help. And that's just, you know, Barry. He's, yeah, the whole group, Barry and his group down there have just been unbelievable. And, you know, to run a Super 2 car now, you need that support. Mm. Doesn't matter how many hours and how many mates I've got come around here of a night.
The days of the 5-speed
have gone. BS. Yeah. You've got to have your Walkinshaw engines. You've got to have an Erebus main game team with their engineering department behind you, you know, because a lot of these kids are coming through and spending $500,000 through the year, and some have only got one crack at it. You've got to make sure, you know, if they're going to put their faith in you, you've got to, you know, make sure provide. You're giving it, provide. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's my biggest fear. We're trying our hardest. And luckily the last few years we've really been able to give a good product, and hence the phone calls. And young Jordan Boys, is we're going to try and do some, you know, wild card stuff with him. He needs to move on a little bit. We did discuss doing Super 2 again, but I think it's time for him to do some wild card programs and get himself a good enduro seat. Mm. You know, we've kind of ticked some boxes there with some wins with him now. And, yeah, we just want to get out and get these other two
rock and rolling,
yeah.
What's your feeling on where, I mean, this is a discussion that's had a lot of times in paddocks and workshops. Super 2, where's it at? Where's it going? New ownership at Supercars. What's your feeling for the I'm hearing a lot of drivers looking for a lot of seats, and there's budgets, and the regular yourselves and the Matty Whites and the Ben Egglestons have got, you know, there's people out there that want to do it. It feels like it's in not a bad place at the moment. What's your take?
I hope that's the case. I've been concerned. I mean, I worked with Supercars in 2019, 2020, trying to put that Super 3, Super 2 deal together to get the grid looking what we're seeing today. It's not ideal, as you know, running the two different classes within one, but at least we've got 25 cars on the grid now. Look, I'm hoping that this year, I mean, they're combined again, but if we can get the Super 2 category up around that 20, and then, of course, in 23 we move into the Gen 2 car. Mm. So that just concerns me how many cars are available.
Mm. That's the big issue.
Yeah, for that Gen 2 thing, because, as you know, Noons, a lot of the collectors have bought the current cars.
Before they finish using them.
Yeah. So, yeah, honestly, Barry and I discussed this, we should have skipped Gen 2, run our VFs off until they go to the new Gen 3 car, but we should have gone to Gen 3 at the same time with a different spec ECU or whatever, like a 500 RPM less or something, Super 2, but same chassis, the new Gen 3 chassis. That enables to do wildcards.
Yep.
Because wildcards won't even be an option next year.
No.
Two different cars.
Yeah.
And I just don't know where the cars are going to come from.
Mm.
I've said to Supercars, we should skip Gen 2 and we should be all at Gen 3. And Gen 3 supposedly supposed to be a cheaper car. So Super 2 are going to have a current car, $500,000 car. Main game are going to have a Gen 3 car, which is $350,000 car.
It's probably $450,000 by the time they finish with it. But
then the running cost, because the engine's definitely going to do twice the mileage. You know, I'm still going to be using engines that do 3,000 Ks and require a rebuild.
Mm.
So I'm concerned.
Mm. For the longer term.
For the longer term.
Couple of years beyond
the next
this
couple
year.
Of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, fair point. I mean, it's a question mark as to, you know, there's a lot of change to come now with
there
main
is.
Game and it flows right through Super 2, Super 3.
Yep.
We might end up with a Super 4 one day because there'll be that many cars
yep.
around over the period. So we'll wait and see what happens, I guess, with all that.
Yeah. The other problem we've got with the Super 2 and Super 3, like Super 3s actually don't cost that much less to run. You know, they're the same engine spec. They cost the same with the engine. Drivetrain's a little bit cheaper. Sure, the initial investment in that car now has been written off compared with a car of the future, but you can't offer much at Super 3 that much cheaper than a Super 2 ride. You know, so, I'm not sure. I am concerned about it after this year, what's going to happen because,
I know of lots of Mustangs and lots of ZBs that are spoken for, sold, that will be parked and put in collections, not going to another team to run. So
there's going to be.
You might want to go and buy new cars, but there might only be eight out there to get.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Eight running in one category of Super 2, and then these were the Super 3s.
VFs
and the current Super 2 cars.
Yeah, you might have a pile of people and who's going to want to come and spend their money if they can't win? Because you go, hey, look, we'd love to run you, mate. You're a good driver, but we don't have a ZB. Here's a VF. Well, that's not really what I want.
Yeah.
Well, we can't get one. So
yeah,
that's the challenge. That's the big challenge.
They had the opportunity. It just made sense to me. All go to the new chassis and skip Gen 2. Super 2, don't go to Mustangs, don't go to ZBs.
Well, we'll wait and see. Things can change. Just because they're said to happen, they could change. You never know. Hey, one of the things too, mate, we've got a bunch of great supporters of our podcast. One of them is the Motorsport Trader. They've got a website where you could get all sorts of motor racing memorabilia.
Yes.
Luke and his team have got all sorts of panels and parts and suits and bits and pieces.
Yep.
So it leads me kind of to the topic, which, by the way, their website is themotorsporttrader.com.au. They are, as the tagline is, keeping your motorsport memories alive. I think I've contractually ticked the box there on how to say that. What is your – and I'm looking around the workshop here when I came up the stairs, some nice Thunderdome trophies, some nice stuff on the walls. There's some Kumo trophies. There's some title. What is your most cherished bit of motor racing memorabilia that's here at Image Racing while we're talking memorabilia and that sort of stuff?
That's a good question, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of things. There's the Peter Brock Classic Trophy and, Oscar Championship winning one. That's probably up there. That's probably the better
they
one.
Had good trophies in the Thunderdome days, didn't they? They were big, huge things.
Yeah, well, you need to build a bloody room. You want to see Brad Jones?
Oh, I've
have
seen
you seen
it,
his
yeah.
trophy room? Yeah, I mean that little photo I just showed you of me mate's Camaro. That
downstairs. Yeah, upstairs. We should cover off that.
That's pretty special.
Yeah, we cover off that story because we talked about this before we turned the microphones on. So we talked earlier about Dean Neville, who you ran cars with, great friends with.
Yep.
Unfortunately, passed away 2 years ago now. In a innocuous
bizarre accident. Yeah,
we should. I mean, he just had a fall. Hit his head.
Yep.
Unfortunately, passed away.
Yep.
He had a 69 Camaro?
69,
a Group N C car that you've had a run in up at Winton and not long after he passed away. So is that the last time you raced?
Yes, it is.
Yourself? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful car. There's a great picture on the wall down here.
Yeah.
And he's a big part of the Image Racing story.
He has been, yeah. Well, I mean, he sponsored me when I ran. He had a company called Kid Home. He sponsored me when I ran in Konica, and then we got together and he had a drive himself. We bought the two Stone Brothers cars, ran them together, had a lot of fun, drank a lot of beers, told a lot of lies, all that stuff. Ripper guy. He ended up running in NC. Beautiful Camaro, yeah. Had his accident. His wife asked me to drive it and went to Winton and had a bit of fun with it. And bugging me dead, I couldn't believe this. I had a phone call from her. Because she decided to advertise the car after that Winton race. And I used to hang shit on her and I said to her, well, thank Christ I don't have to work on that frigging piece of shit anymore. And she rings me up one night and she goes, what are you doing, Terry? And I said, oh, just sitting here having a beer. Why? And she goes, guess what? And I said, what? And she goes, you're going to work on that piece of shit again. And I said, what are you talking about? Well, my wife's brother bought it. And it's still sitting in my shed at home, the Camaro. My wife's brother doesn't drive. He just bought it because he liked Dean.
And thought it was a cool car.
Thought it was a cool car. And we're just keeping it. We're going to go and have a play with it every now and then. So, yeah, I'm still working on the bloody thing.
Can't get away from the Camaro.
Can't get away from it. Yeah.
Are you going to have a pedal in anything else in the future for a bit of fun? Or are you sort of consider yourself to just run the headsets these days? And or maybe something historic that's a bit of fun?
Yeah, well, we are going to bring the Camaro out. But we're just talking about my 11-year-old, 12 next week son, Ryan. He said, we're going to do an enduro together.
Are we?
And I've gone, right, well, you better bloody hurry up and get your license because I don't know how many more days I've got left. So I'm not sure what his plans are there. But
well, he sounds like he's got a plan though. He loves his racing. I met him before when we sat down here. He loves his – he's got his history books. He listens to the podcast. I hope he's listening to this one because I'll be really disappointed if your son doesn't listen to the one that you are actually on. The podcast.
He tells me about them all.
Right, okay. So you don't have to listen to them. You get the report.
I get the report and then Ryan, I can just make out I've heard.
Very good, very good. Some friends of ours at the National Motor Racing Museum up at Mount Panorama who, of course, have some cool cars and memorabilia up there. They're open 6 days a week except Tuesdays. Don't go Tuesdays. There's no one there. But if you want to know the opening times, go to their Facebook page or the museum's Bathurst website. And they're one of our longtime partners. And they sponsor our top 10 shootout, which basically is 10 things. You give me the first word that comes into your head. It's just fancy word association, really.
Righto.
You can't use the same word twice. You can use a couple of words if you can't do it in one, okay? What springs to mind when I say Super 2?
Money.
Oscar?
Fun.
Thunderdome?
Fun.
You use that again.
Oh, sorry. Thunderdome. Yeah. Yeah, speed.
Yeah, nice. Bob Jane?
Smart.
TCM. Everyone forgets you did a little bit of TCM.
Too expensive.
I think a few people say that too. Peter Brock.
Legend.
Kim Jane.
Great bloke.
Bathurst.
Second best track.
What's the best?
Thunderdome.
Hey! I should have known you were going to say that actually. I should have known that that was where you were going with that one. Two to go. Barry Ryan, who's been on the podcast before. If you haven't listened to the episode, ask a young bloke about it or go through the archive.
One word, Barry Ryan.
Okay, that might be a bit tricky, huh?
That's it, yeah, yeah. Clever.
Yeah, nice. And Corumburra.
Home.
Oh, I knew you'd say that. I knew you'd say that. Mate, thank you for your time. We've covered a stack of ground for a two-part episode of the V8 Sleuth podcast. This is going to keep your young bloke very busy listening to this in the next few weeks. We look forward to seeing you at a racetrack soon with the Super 2 and the Super 3 cars. Again, if you're in the Corumburra area, maybe down in Lee and Gathaway, home of the great Jared Ruffett, the four-time Hawthorn AFL Premiership player. That's just how I'm going to slip a bit of footy in.
Yeah.
T&G Mechanical Repairs in Corumburra is the place to bring your car.
Absolutely.
For servicing. You do it all here, don't you?
We do it everything. Yeah. Right. We're Lomas Roadworthies, everything.
Sort of. There you go. We've slipped the plug in there.
There you go.
Google it. Look it up. Find it. It's here. It's got to be done. Terry, great body of work. Plenty more to be done, but I'm sure we've left out a bunch of stuff along the way that we can do another time. So,
well, you've brought some of the stuff I've even forgotten about to me, my attention. But, no, thank you. Thank you. Thanks, guys, for listening to the podcast. It's been great. Thanks a lot.
A big thank you to Terry Wahoon. It was fantastic to sit down with him over two parts of a podcast and talk about his career and his involvement. He's had a lot of experience over the years, both behind the wheel, on the headset, in the workshop. It was really great. I hope you enjoyed so many of those great stories and insight from Terry. Don't forget, our bookshop website is open for business, bookshop.v8sleuth.com.
vh.com.au. You'll find all sorts of bits and pieces in there to keep yourselves amused over the next few months. Subscribe to our newsletter too from the vhsleuth.com.au website. You don't miss a thing with that. We put through links to some of the feature stories and news stories that we do on the website. When there's new products out, you'll get told all about them. So definitely make sure you subscribe to that. Follow us on the socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're on all of those. A little bit of news for you too. The Castrol Motorsport News podcast with Andrew Van Leeuwen and Stefan Bartholomaeus. It will be coming back next week. The boys are all revved up for another big year of motorsport in Australia and around the world. Of course, the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco every Wednesday pretty much is the go in terms of when those all drop. We've got a bunch of great guests in store for you, a bunch of classic car episodes, a bunch more Q&A to do. It is going to be a massive year. Hope you've enjoyed this episode with Terry Wyhoon. We will chat to you very soon.